VFBS Original Music Specials. This is the Forces Station. Andrew Roachford in session.
This is VFBS.
Here goes. Our guest today is one of the nicest guys in the music business. It's
Andrew Roachford.
His new album is called
Encore
and came out in February. Andrew describes his fashion style as
cool.
Andrew grew up in
South London
and left school aged
16.
His first girlfriend was called
Marianne
and had a lovely
bum.
Andrew Roachford is currently touring the UK and describes his new album as
amazing.
We're in session with Andrew Roachford, and the first track Andrew is going to play for us today is the track that changed everything back in 1989. It's
Cuddly Toy.
Andrew Roachford, in session, BFBS.
You're listening to BFBS. I'm Richard Hatch, and we're in session with Andrew Roachford. Thanks ever so much for coming in.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
I have to say, it's slightly intimidating. You are proper muso as well. You look the part. You know, you're wearing sunglasses.
Oh, dear.
You know, it's bright in here. It's you've got a fur coat. It's 30 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, it is intimidating because, you know, I'm like, I'm in a Matalan jumper. Do you know what I mean? I'm out of my depth here. Right. Cuddly Toy. Mm. Was a big hit, 1989. Tell us about the song and what was going on in your life at the time.
In my life, I had just started touring with my band, and, you know, we hadn't, well, had the album finished, but I wanted to do an up-tempo track for the set just to liven up the set a bit.
Yep.
And at that time, I also had a keyboard player who had the worst chat-up lines in the world, so I kind of wrote the song as a bit of a Mickey take out of him, and never actually expected it to be recorded. We just did it for the live thing. I wrote it for the live gig, and the record company were like, "What's that song that you keep playing at the end of the show?" And everyone keeps jumping up and down and going crazy. I said, "Oh no, that's just some joke thing that we did." And he said, "No, we need to record that." And then I did. And at that time, I was still living at home. I was just into my teens, and in one evening, I had it written, more or less, you know, and because it's easy when you've got the subject matter quite clear in your head, and you can just, and you're not actually taking that seriously. I think that's when the flow really engages.
Because they always say, don't they, it's the records that kind of write themselves in 5 minutes, just are the ones.
It's often the case. They just sort of turn up, and you think, wow, that shouldn't be that easy. You kind of get worried because it's finished, and you think, no, it's obviously got to do more to it,
yeah.
And it's, you just have to avoid the temptation to overcook it.
Now, you must still get royalty checks from that. That must be the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, you know, it gets put in films and people doing covers and all kinds of things. So, yeah, I did all right from that song. I would have never have dreamed that all these years later I'd still be playing it. Still, people still be playing it on the radio, still loving it.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
We have to mention Alan Partridge. We have to mention. Give us your best. Because it was in, and it's one of the funniest clips.
Yes.
You must have seen it. So let me just explain. Cuddly Toy was used at the start of Alpha Papa, the Alan Partridge film from 2013, and it features right at the very beginning. He's driving along, and it's just the funniest bit, and he's going for it, and he's looking in the mirror, checking himself out while he's singing it.
Yep.
And then he says, "You've left your fog lamps on! You've left your fog lamps on!" And then he comes back in on the chorus, and it's just a brilliant bit of filmmaking.
Yeah, that, I mean, I remember seeing that in the cinema, sitting in the back of the cinema, kind of sinking into my seat. And, it was funny, though. It was fun. I mean, it was, again, a surreal moment because I've always been a big fan of the Alan Partridge, Steve Coogan thing.
Yeah.
And again, it was like when I got the phone call, they said, "Is it okay if we put it in the film?" And initially they said, "We'll just bung it in the end credits." And I said, "Yeah, that's fine." Then another phone call, "Actually, can we put it in a scene? Because he wants to do it as a whole scene." And I went, okay. And I had no idea what it was going to be.
Yeah.
So when I went to the cinema, obviously, it was funny, though. It was great.
It is a brilliant, brilliant clip. I tell you what, if you're ever down, you put that on, and that is just the funniest bit. But it's done in a nice way. It's not done in a mocking way.
No, and, you know, someone said to me, would I have a problem with it being slightly sent up? And I was like, the song's called Cuddly Toy. I think it doesn't take itself that seriously.
You know. So did you ever manage to speak to Coogan about it or not?
I didn't. I was doing a show in Brighton, and my people were talking to his people, and you know, trying to get him down to the gig, because I gathered from that he's a big music fan, and I thought, wouldn't it be fun if we just got him up on stage at the end, you know, for that song?
Yeah.
And did the Fog Lights remix. And, you know, he couldn't make it, but, you know, well, I'm sure we'll link up sometime, definitely.
Okay, let's have some more music. I want you to pick a song or an artist that's influenced your career.
Ooh, a song and an artist. Well, it has to be Sly and the Family Stone, a big influence on my career, especially the song Family Affair.
1, 2, 3... And it's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. Yeah. It's a family affair. One child grows up to be somebody that just loves to learn. Another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. both of them. She is in the blood. Both kids, good and mom. This blood's thicker than mud. It's a family affair. 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 Checking each other out. Nobody wants to blow, and nobody wants to be left out. You can't leave, 'cause your heart is there. But you can't stay, 'cause you've been somewhere else. You can't cry, 'cause you're all broke down. But you're crying anyway, 'cause you're all broke down. It's a family affair. 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 Hit me.
Andrew Roachford, in session.
BFBS.
You're a good-looking guy, right? You know you're a good-looking
guy. Thank you. You're not bad yourself, love.
See, I get not bad. See what I mean? Now, you've been gigging for about... you're coming up to almost 30 years, and I'm not trying to make you sad here, but...
No, it's true.
I want to hear about the girls.
Yeah, yeah.
Just give me a flavour of of the Roachford lifestyle.
Oh, I mean, it's so much more civilized now. When I started out, it was actually nuts because, you know, you had the song in the charts and you're on top of the pops and people, all kinds of mad people gravitate to you.
Yeah.
I remember being in the coach once and we started in the coach and this car behind was flashing the lights and we pulled over, thought maybe it was a undercover police or something. And it was a woman and she'd come up there with her daughter and she was trying to get us to put her daughter on the coach with us. And that's really bad. That's really bad. Yeah, yeah. That's just. She goes, she wants to come out with you on the road. I was like,
what kind?
You're her mum, you know.
What kind of mother?
Needless to say, we didn't take her.
Okay, I'm going to fire some quick questions at you.
Okay,
quick ones.
Uh oh.
Okay. What makes you angry?
What makes me Katie Hopkins? No. What makes me angry is people's intolerance for each other. And you see it on the television, whether it be about racial or religious issues, that kind of gets my goat, definitely.
Yeah. What's your signature dish when you cook?
It's bag bowl.
Your favourite TV programme?
X-Files.
What car do you drive?
Oh, at the moment I'm driving A5 Audi.
Oh, convertible.
Nice. It's
doing,
quite nice.
Man doing well for himself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. What are you most proud of?
What am I most proud of? I'm most proud of what I've achieved when I see my mum's proud look on her face. Oh, that makes nice. Me quite proud.
Yeah, that's a good answer, that one. Current artist you like to work with?
I'd quite like to work with Adele. As a matter of fact, more than quite, I'd love to work with her. I think she's got a bit of soul to her voice, and I believe her when she sings, and that's really important to me.
People really connect with her, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, she gives you her soul, and that's what soul music is about, you know?
Okay, cheery one. When you die, what do you hope people will say about you?
Well, you know, musically, I've always kind of straddled different sort of genres, and I always said, people, don't put me in a box until I die. But
that's good.
I think I'd like the fact that people would think that I try to sort of push the boundaries of music and what people's perception of what you should be and shouldn't be doing musically.
Evolve.
Yeah. Evolve, yeah.
Okay, which song do you wish you'd written?
I think that would have to be Family Affair by Sly and the Family Stone.
It's a brilliant track.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing like it.
If you were reincarnated, what animal would you come back as?
Oh, a cat.
Why?
Because cats are very smart and kind of, they're not dependent on people. They just get on with it and, you know, they just laze around. They always look so comfortable, and I always feel like I'm overworked, always working, and which I love. I love my work, but cats are sort of like they're on one long holiday.
Yeah, they're on the life is on their terms,
yes,
cats.
Yeah, yeah. They're just stretching by the fire. That's kind of as active as it gets.
Okay, time for another record. You're a big fan of James Brown. What is it about James Brown that you love?
I love the fact that no matter what mood I'm in, if I'm really tired and it's like 3 a.m, I've been partying, and you put on James Brown, from somewhere I get some energy and it keeps me going. He's just the most powerful live performer as well. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Get up, get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene, get on up, like a sex machine, get on up. Machine. Get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene, get on up, I like a sex machine, get on up, wait a minute, shake your arm, then use your palm, stay on the scene, I like a sex machine, you got to have the feeling, sure as your bone, get it together, right on, right on, get up.
Session with Andrew Roachford. Now, your new album is called Encore, and it came out in February. How many albums have you made so far? And I only ask that because when we had a little chat a few weeks ago, you actually couldn't remember.
I couldn't remember. I think it's 10 now. I'm almost sure. Because I had to go, okay, there was obviously the first album, which had Cuddly Toy, which is just called Roachford. Then there was Get Ready. Then there was Feel. Then there was Permanent Shade of Blue. And then there was The Roachford Files. And then there was Heart of the Matter, Word of Mouth, and Where I Stand. And Addicted. Oh, it's 11, sorry.
Because this is your first this is your first covers album, isn't it?
Yes.
But yeah. Why did you choose to write just that one track on it?
You know what? I was recording the album, the covers album, this album, and in the meantime, I was still writing songs for later, for whatever, and that one just seemed to fit in so well. And some songs you write, you kind of know just get it out now, you know, because it just feels like it was right. And I thought it didn't sound alien in the album. And I thought for some of my fans out there, they've been quite happy to get an original.
Tell us about the kind of Roachford treatment that you've given the songs that you've chosen. What is the Roachford treatment?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I used to gig with my uncle's band, and we only did covers. You know, it was like he played in bars around and like places like Ronnie Scott's and all that, and it was only standards and covers. And I started to really hate doing covers and got into writing my own songs, and I had a really big aversion to it. But then I kind of realize that you don't have to do them like the originals. You know, you're an artist. And I listened to all of my favorite artists, from Otis Redding down to Stevie Wonder, Jimi Hendrix, whatever. And I realized they'd all done covers. And actually, some of the songs that they'd done, I thought they did the originals, like Hey Joe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really didn't know that they were covers. And it's because they made them their own. They were still their art and their expression in there. And because I'm a musician, I was able to do that as well. And I used to perform some of the songs in my encores at my gigs. And I did a song by Stevie Wonder called I Don't Know Why I Love You. And most people don't know that song. And they thought, again, it was my original song. And I kind of introduced them to the Stevie Wonder version. And yeah, and I thought, yeah, okay. So it's not a karaoke kind of thing.
But where would you rate this album amongst your other ones?
It's quite up there in some ways because it was recorded quite sort of quickly, which is sometimes a good thing. You don't have a chance to overcook it, you know. So it was done very quickly in a room, more or less, few overdubs with the band. And so it does capture something of the live feel, because my strength is my live performances. And if people come and see the live, they go, great. And then the challenge is to try and get that energy in the studio, because something about a sterile environment in the studio puts you in a different headspace. So I think this one's a bit closer to the live feel.
Talking about the performance aspect of what you do, it was your uncle, wasn't it, that said to you, give him a show?
Yes.
It's obviously something that resonates with you still.
Yeah, my uncle was quite a, you know, it's like being in the army, you know, it's quite a hard taskmaster. He really was, and he actually was in the army in a sense. He always used to say, you know, in Barbados, I was in the army, I was in the band. You know, but band always took a while to, you know. And so he had this regimental, like, you have to give him a show, you have to, and he was very competitive, and, you know, he always wanted me to be the best at what I did. And I think that he instilled in me that, you know, you have to entertain people. Yeah. You know, you can't just go on there and just bore the living daylights out of people.
How did you choose which tracks to choose?
Well, half of them were songs that I kind of did mess around with in gigs. I'd take a break, come back on the encore, just the piano, and play some of my songs. And then occasionally I might go, well, here's a version of your song that you didn't expect, and it's kind of a different approach to it. And so some of those songs were kind of already chosen.
Yeah.
Then we were in the studio and we literally were just sitting there listening to stuff with me and the band, going, oh my God, wouldn't that be nice if it was done like this? And it was in the moment. We did it really quickly and just messed around with the songs and tried different approaches.
Now, you mentioned Stevie Wonder a few minutes ago, and I know he's had a big influence on your music, so I'm going to stick this on for you, which I know you love. It's the brilliant Stevie Wonder.
Summer day, my share.
BS in session with Andrew Roachford.
Tell us about your childhood. Where'd you grow up?
Lived in Tottenham.
Yeah,
actually, I went to school right by White Hart Lane.
Did you?
Yeah. This off Park Lane, White Hart Lane, and then when I was about 8, 9, I moved to South London, and I still now consider myself South Londoner.
Tell us about your mum and dad.
My mum and dad are both from the Caribbean, from Barbados. And it's funny, and when I went to school, most of my black mates were, their parents were from Jamaica. And because Barbados is such a small island, it was really rare to find someone from Barbados. It's like, oh, where's that? And, you know. But yeah, so the Roachford family, which is actually my mum's side, are just generations deep in music. It's just like a family trade. It's been since, I think, great-grandparents. And my father just sort of ended up getting roped into that because he joined the family, so to speak. So the brothers roped him in. He became a drummer. My uncle trained him as a drummer. And then he went on to be orchestrating, so he was a conductor.
Oh, right.
And, you know, he went to Sweden. And when I heard he was a conductor, I thought they meant he was working on the buses. But apparently, no, it was orchestras. And
what records did you grow up listening to? What kind of noise was in the house? What music was in the house?
Yeah, in my house, it was such a mix because you had obviously what my parents were listening to, which was anything from the Caribbean, be it calypso, reggae, whatever, and stuff from America of that time, like Stax music, which is soul music, basically. And my mum had an album called The History of Soul, which I once just put on and listened to, and that's where I heard Family Affair for the first time.
Really?
And I was completely, even as a kid, was like, what is this music? Where does it come from? I want more. And then I was Radio 1, listening to Radio 1, and at that time they had stuff like, I know Rod Stewart was on the radio. You had all the sort of early 80s and 70s bands, and that really had a big influence on me, like glam rock, all that stuff. But later, I started to get more into that, and then Jimi Hendrix.
Tell us about the piano moment when you just kind of got up and started playing. It was obviously just something you were supposed to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was destined to play. And it's lucky that I was born into a family where there was always a piano in the house. And one morning, I don't even know why, I got up straight from sleep, straight to the piano, and started playing. And it hadn't even got light yet, so you can imagine it was very early. Woke everyone up, and my mum came downstairs, and I was playing it thinking, this is the most beautiful sound I've ever heard. And I was just so carried away, I was so in it. And my mum came in, and she was just listening, and she went, yeah, we've got to get him some lessons. You know, apparently it was the worst racket, but for me it was just a really beautiful sound.
The band was called Roachford, obviously, it was your surname. How did you convince the other members of the band, you know, hey, let's call the band after me? How did that work? How did that conversation go?
Actually, first of all, that wasn't even my idea to call it Roachford, because it's a name that I'd grown up with, so I didn't sound that special to me.
Yeah.
But I was working with another guy who was a songwriter called Johnny Britton, and he decided we were going to be called Roachford and Britton, and I just kept that. And I got signed initially as a solo artist. And so I was already signed and I already had the songs written. And then the band that I used, the rhythm section, those guys were already in their own band and it didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
And I said to them, I want to come and join me. So they kind of joined the thing.
You were a black kid growing up in London in the 70s. What was that like?
It was fabulous, you know. I know that for my mum generation, it was a lot because they were immigrants, so they came over, and like a lot of immigrants, they had to sort of find their way in there and settle in, and they had a hard time here and there. But I think they made it easier for us, and so, you know, yes, there was definitely some racism that I encountered, but generally speaking, I had a great time. My memories as a child are pretty good. I think London is one of the more liberal cities in the Western world, you know. And, I really loved my youth, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that Sam Cooke's A Change Is Going to Come is an important song for you. What is it about that song that connects with you?
So many things. It connects with me, obviously, on a lyric. You know, he's talking about civil rights in a sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's heartfelt. You see, this is the thing that I love, is that it's sung with a compassion and a yearning. And it's not an angry protest song. It is a protest song, but it's not angry. It's how I feel about when I see people fighting over differences of color and class and all those things. It just makes me sad rather than angry. I just get really sort of disillusioned sometimes about people, and that song kind of has that feeling in it, you know, and there's a yearning, and I think that's the most powerful message you can put across when you put it in that way, rather than putting it in angry, because you can, you know, people can get sort of put off if it's angry.
Totally. Just to explain the story is that Sam Cooke wrote the song. He was turned away from a hotel in Louisiana because he was black, and the refrain is, "It's been a long time coming, but I know a change will come." And it became, as you say, an American civil rights anthem. Was used in Malcolm X and all
that's
the rest
right.
of it, wasn't it?
That's right. And you know, the performers in those days, the black performers, had to use different toilets, and it was a complete different world from what I've experienced. And you can easily forget that, you know, these guys really had to fight for the liberties that we have today.
Okay. Let's have another track. What do you reckon? Sam Cooke?
I think we have to do Sam Cooke. We know we share the same birthday, 22nd of January.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And my mum said when I was a baby, if she wanted to shut me up if I was crying, she used to put on Sam Cooke, and it worked like a charm. Still does.
In a little tent, oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too. But I'm afraid to die. Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
You're working with Mike and the Mechanics at the moment. Tell us about the call you had from Mike Rutherford.
Yeah, I got a call it was from his producer, a guy called Chris Neal, saying, Mike is working on some new songs and would you like to come down and meet him, just have a chat? And they were very kind of vague about it, you know? And I was thinking, Mike and the Mechanics, I like some of the singles that I heard, and I thought, this is kind of weird.
You're way cooler than Mike and the Mechanics.
I wasn't sure how that was going to work, but then when I got down, I went to Mike's place, and we were chatting, and realized we had more in common than I initially thought, and he had the guitar in his hand, and he was just strumming some things, and I started humming, and he was like, what's that? And I was like, well, I'm just kind of jamming and humming to what you're playing. And he's like, we should record that. Let's just record it. I had a little thing, and they recorded some of these sort of hummings and chanting and stuff that I was doing. And Mike had made up his mind from that point.
Really?
He made up his mind straight away. And he said to me, well, I know you're obviously doing the Rochford thing, but we can maybe find a way to make it work around each other's schedule. Would you be interested in recording some new stuff and maybe touring, And I was like, well, yeah, I'll have to think about it as far as how it was going to work. And then the album started coming together, and I got really into his vibe, I learned a lot, because Mike is coming from somewhere a little different. Yeah, there's a similarity, but he's definitely got a different approach to music, and it intrigued me, and I'm always up for learning. I'm like a sponge,
So that was 2010, you started doing that.
Yeah.
Were you a big Mike and Mechanics fan before that, or was it...?
Well, I obviously, the Living Years, and I kind of had it was double edged with me, because the Living Years went to number one and it kept Cuddly Toy at number one spot. So I had a little bit of a, issue about that, but I'm over it. And it was weird, I'm on stage singing the Living Years thinking, I never saw this coming. But I'm a big fan of Paul Carrack's voice, he's got such an amazing vocal technique and sound. Big Shoes, especially, the first gig we did, they're all sitting there and they're all been living with Mechanics music for, proper Mechanics fans. And you could see they're a little bit skeptical. What's this Rochford guy doing? But then when the show started, they realized, oh, okay. Again, it's not sort of the cover version of It's Something Different. I'm bringing my, the same way if Paul Carrack was to front my band, he would have to do it his way. He could not do it, so it really worked really well. And we just come off a tour last year, actually, in America. And that was, again, a daunting thing, because Mechanics hadn't been to America for 20-odd years. And they're all sitting there. And Americans are very vocal. If they don't like it, they speak. And if they do, after every song or even a solo, they get up and start clapping. It's really weird. Actually, you get standing ovations after every song.
That's brilliant.
Up and down like the church or something.
How many gigs do you think you do a year then, do you think?
Oh, dear. It literally is. Like, I remember this guy who plays with Mechanics also plays with Tom Jones, and he says Tom tours 320 or 30 odd days a year.
Yeah.
Even at now, he still does that. And I'm not up there, but we're a couple of hundred, definitely.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it more fun touring with a bigger group when you're doing the stuff with Mike and Mechanics?
It's definitely more social.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot more drinking. It's like, it's definitely a lot more unhealthy. And when we came back from the American tour, it was like we all looked like the living dead, because it was you finish a gig and you're just wired and you're in America, and the beer's got so much better in America than it was when I used to go there back 20 years ago.
Yeah. That's great. So I had kind of images of you heading to Nando's straight after a gig, but you're out and you're partying. And...
Oh, no, we still, there's no, it's not the Horlicks tour yet.
Okay, let's have another track from your new album, Encore. What are you going to play for us?
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So this next song is the David Gray classic. It's called This Year's Love. And it's been like this. Here we go.
Knows this high time I've been
in circles time again. Cut like a knife for now. So if you love me, got to go for sure. Cause it takes something more this time than sweet, sweet life. So when you kiss me on that 9th Street, sweep me off my feet, singing ain't this life suits me. This here love, this here love.
Andrew Roachford in session.
BFBS.
BFBS in session with Andrew Roachford. Thanks for coming in. Let's have a little talk about life on the road. You must have spent more time in hotel rooms than any man alive. Do you ever give a false name when you're checking in?
I used to, yeah, definitely.
What was
Mike,
it?
Mike still does. I can't remember what his is, but what was mine? James Brown. Sometimes I'll tick myself in as James Brown.
Did you?
Well, you can be anyone you want to be. Yeah. So it's like James Brown, occupation. Sometimes well, soul singer.
yeah, to set quite loud in yeah. the foyer.
But you know, I've noticed now, more recently, everyone's more security conscious, and so they get really serious. You check in some places, they go, passport number, and they get like that, and so you can't really give
Mickey
false
Mouse.
Names.
Not, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that. But I don't have so many sort of stalkers now, so that's okay, because it's normally for that reason where people can find out where you're staying and harass you. You know, there's definitely a couple of I've got lovely fans, the best fans on the planet, but there's always been that one or two that just don't know where the boundaries are.
I think we know that. I think we call that the nutter factor.
Yes, that is the nutter factor, and you can see them coming, and they believe that they kind of own you because they went out and bought your album and saw you somewhere and bought more than one ticket, so you're their property, yeah. And how dare you ignore them, and it's just like, okay, okay.
One of your first ever songs was Family Man. Just to try and find out about your kind of home life, are you a family man? Are you married? Have you got kids?
No, none of the above. I wrote that song initially when I met the great Ozzy Osbourne. I saw him, and at that time he had a reputation of being the wild man of rock. And there was this woman bossing him around in the cafe. It was in the rehearsal room. And he looked like a little mouse, and she was saying, you should do this and do it. And, of course, that was his wife, you know.
We know now, of
yeah,
course.
Now, of course, yeah.
The formidable and Sharon Osbourne.
Sharon Osbourne. And then years later, I was on a flight from going to Paris, and the person sitting next to me, we got chatting, and she said, so what do you do? And then Roach said, oh, yeah, I know Roach. She said, Family Man. I said, yeah. And I told her the story. I said, I wrote this about Ozzy Osbourne. You know, he was there with his wife, and I didn't know it was her.
No way.
And so I was talking about the story. Yeah, you know, she was bossing him around. And then the plane landed, and she got up and she goes, Sharon Osbourne. And she introduced herself. And
you are kidding.
I just went, beat me up, Scotty. Beat me up.
Oh, my goodness.
No, she's lovely, though. She took it all in her stride. She's got a great sense of humour.
So, Sharon Osbourne. But you've got some celebrity fans as well. I heard that Noel Gallagher and Jamie Oliver are fans of yours.
Yeah. Well, it's weird, actually. When I first met the Gallagher brothers at a hotel, they came up to me, running up to me like, oh, my God, Rochford, Conny Toymer. And what's this? And it was so long ago that I actually didn't know who they were. And apparently I found out afterwards that they once trashed their hotel room listening to my music, listening to the Cuddly Toy and doing the air guitar.
Is that right?
It went down in, yeah, apparently
great
it's
story.
In the history. And they're really lovely and I was at a party at one of their birthday parties, and Liam trying to sing the Cuddly Toy to me. He goes, I love that song, you know, you know how it goes. And I'm like, yeah, I know how it goes. Yeah. And I remember saying to him, well, you guys are amazing, you know, you're the most amazing Brit pop band. And I said pop, and all of a sudden the whole room went quiet. And he said, with some really purple, colourful language, we're not pop, we're rock. We're bloody rock. And he was right in my face.
Was he?
Like, spitting and fuming. We're rock. And I went, sorry, rock band.
And what's the story with Jamie Oliver?
There was one song that he had played at his wedding. It was
really?
Like the first, yeah, it was Only to Be With You. It's like his all-time Desert Island disc. And then I bumped into him as well at an airport. And he was acting kind of weird. And afterwards, he actually tweeted that he was quite shy to meet me,
really?
You know.
And, how's that nice?
And that was lovely. And, you know, I think he's a great cook. So what can I say?
You're mutual fans
yeah,
of
yeah,
each
yeah.
other.
No,
he makes a great quiche.
No, he's a good guy. He's really down to earth.
Okay, let's have another song. Give us a track that you wish you'd written.
I wish I'd written All Right Now by Free.
Andrew Roachford, in session.
BFBS.
Let's talk about writing songs. You've written a load of hit records. What kind of tips can you offer to people starting out as a songwriter? Give us some tips.
I think one of the tips is ways to avoid writer's block. And I think one of the ways is don't analyse yourself too much. Just get on with it. You know, you're going to write some good songs and you're going to write some not so good ones. Don't judge it too much because that can cause you to get stuck. Mm. Just keep churning it out and have fun with it. I think having fun, it comes across in the music. And it's better if you're writing songs about something that you know about, something that's connected to your life directly, because again, that's how you can engage a good flow. And people, you'd be surprised how much people just resonate with it. It's amazing. Some of the songs of mine that have had the best reaction are songs I didn't even know people would actually get because I wrote it about something so specific, so personal, that I just had to write it at the time, and I never imagined it would be a favourite on the album. I thought it'd be just like the silent album track, and I've been surprised, so I realised I don't have a clue. Just get on with it, man.
And what comes first, the melody or the writing?
For me, it's melody driven. Like when I write, I tend to sit by the piano with the guitar and I'll be strumming some chords, playing some chords, and I'll start singing straight away melodies. I don't even know where they come from. It's just instant. And there's sounds and there's words in there. And I read in Marvin Gaye, a book about Marvin Gaye, that he kind of did that. He just sang any old thing. And then you analysed what he was kind of trying to say, because you normally a message in there. Mm. And there's sounds that sound good. And you just kind of go backwards in a way and try and work out what you were saying.
It was the Brits recently, and we've got some amazing stars at the moment. We've already talked about Adele. We've got Ellie Goulding. We've got Ed Sheeran. Who do you listen to on the radio?
On the radio, I mean, the people that you've described, I love. I mean, I listen to a lot of old school stuff as well.
Yeah.
Of course, Ed Sheeran. I like the fact that he had the guts to get up on Wembley Stadium and do dates there just with him and a stomp pedal.
Do you think music's in a good place at the moment?
I mean, when I started out, it was music everywhere, and it was about learning to play instruments and singing and stuff, and that seemed to disappear for a while. Young people didn't want to see you set on stage. What's he got on there? Guitar? What's all that about? But now it's gone completely the other way, and you're not cool unless you've got a guitar and a beard, you know?
You're absolutely right. You know, a media beard. I call it a media beard.
And I love the fact that these music shops are thriving now, and it's cool to have a guitar. And as a result of that, when I go around London and there's jam sessions and stuff, young musicians, the standard is so much higher than it was like 15 odd years ago. And that can only be a good thing for music.
What's next for you after the album?
Well, touring like crazy, you know. I'm also back in the studio with Mike, and there'd be a new Mechanics album as well. So there's a lot going on. That's how it is these days, you know. You have to plan 2 years in advance. And so I will be just doing some UK dates and then go off to Europe.
Brilliant. OK, Andrew, that's all we've got time for. Thanks ever so much for coming into BFBS. Let's have the last record. What are you going to play for us?
And this song now is a song from my Permanent Shade of Blue album, and it's called Only to Be With You. 1, 2, 3, and...
I used to live my life just fast and free, and do as I feel, Lord. Right down to the bone, I was a rolling stone, just wanna be free. But now I think it just might be a little more than slightly changing my views, Lord. This is a far cry from what I know, but all I know, I want only to be with you. Cause through and through, I'm just a freak for you. Nobody's made me want to stay this long the way that you do. Turn your love on and I feel so reborn, yeah. I always want you. But sometimes I feel like, hey, no, this can't be right. This cannot be real. I've seen love come, yes, I've seen it go too. And all I know, I want only to be with you. Through and through, I'm just a freak for you. Ooh, only to be with you. Cause through and through, girl, I believe in you. Sometimes I feel like, you know, this can't be right, can't it be real? And I feel like I've seen a light, cause all I know that I want is only to be with you. I'm a freak for you. Oh. say only, 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 only.
Thank you. Thank you.
BFBS, original music specials. On digital radio, FM and satellite TV in the UK.
Online and on air around the world.
This is the Forces Station.
BFBS.